Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nida Daf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur 9 lines from the top of Daf Yud Zayin. You will notice a triangle. This triangle is a continuation from the markings that we started at the end of our previous Shiur, whereby Reb Shimon ben Yochai presents a list of things that one ought to avoid. So we continue now with a list that he provides of 5 items. And we have a topic heading and structural note featured on the side of our Gemara in the margin. You will notice we've written nosei/mivneh, where we combine a topic heading, a nosei, together with a structural note. At times, these notes appear in separate forms, just the nosei and alone and the mivneh alone. But here, we feature a little diamond, you can see, and in our Gemara text, you will notice along the side of the text, along the right-hand side, numbers 1 through 5. These are 5 heidvorim, 5 things, ha'oisa oisa mischayev benafsha, one who does these things is guilty for his own life. In other words, he's living dangerously, and if anything happens to him, so in Shomayim, after he is gone, after he's dead, they will ask him, why did he not care for himself? So these will be first listed and then explained at each diamond. The Gemara now. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Chamisha Dvorim Hein, Sha'isa Isan Mischayev Benafshoi, Vidomoi Baroshoi. Rashi says, Domoi Baroshoi, Ne'enashal Atzmo, he is punished. V'chovas Domo Nidreshes Mimenu, and his obligation to care for himself is sought out from him, lachar misosu, after he is dead. In other words, he is asked, why did you violate these things? And let us see now, back in the Gemara, what the list includes. So, number one, ha'oichel shum koluf ubotzel koluf ubeitza klufa, one who eats a peeled shum, often translated as garlic, or a botzel, an onion, or an egg that's peeled, and we'll see shortly, left overnight. V'hashoise mashkin mezugin, or one who drinks from liquids to which water was added. Those are more poured liquids. She'ovar aleihem halayla, that stayed overnight. This she'ovar aleihem halayla goes on the 3 items that are included in the eating. That was what we called number 1. And here regarding beverages that are left overnight. Number 3, v'halon b'veis hakvoros, one who sleeps in a cemetery. Number 4, v'hanoytil sipornov v'zorkon l'rishus rabim, one who removes his fingernails, he clips his nails, and throws the nails into the public thoroughfare. And number 5, v'hamekiz dam u'meshamish mitosa, one who bloodlets, and after that medical procedure known as bloodletting, goes ahead and engages in intimacy. Now, these 5 things will be reviewed by the Gemara. As you can see, as we mentioned with regard to the numbers along the side of the Gemara text. So number 1, ha'oichel shum koluf, one who eats peeled garlic, onions or eggs that were left overnight. V'afagav demanchi besilta, even though he left them in a basket. In other words, they were left in a container, not left literally outside exposed, but they were put in a container, the peeled items that we mentioned, umitsairi v'chasimi, and it was tied shut and sealed. Nevertheless, that doesn't help. Ruach ro shir alehen, a ruach ro, an evil spirit dwells upon them, sets upon them, and hence they are considered dangerous. The lo amoron, Elo delo shayer bahen ikoron oklipasan. The problem that exists with them is if you didn't leave anything on them, you didn't leave either any of its roots, as is the case with an onion or garlics, or you didn't leave any of the peel or the shell, as is the case with an egg. Also, with regard to the onion or garlic, if you left some of the peel on it, even though most of it may have been peeled away, but you left some peel on it or some shell on it, that would save it. If he left part of the peel or the shell on them, then they wouldn't present a danger. Number two, one who drinks from beverages that were left overnight. Amar Vihuda, Amar Shmuel, Vuhu, She Lonu, the Kli Matchis. The problem is if they were left in a metal receptacle. Left in a metal receptacle overnight. Omar Rav Papa, Kli Neser, Kli Matchis Domu. There's a material known as Neser, so vessels made of this Neser material have the same din as Kli Matchis, as metal vessels. V'chein om Rabbi Yochanan v'hu shalonu b'kli machis. Rabbi Yochanan also says, like Shmuel, that the problem of beverages left overnight is only if they were left in a metal container. U'kli neser k'kli machis damu. And the neser material is treated in this context the same way as we treat metal. In other words, it too would present a problem for beverages left in them overnight. V'halon b'veis hakvoros, one who sleeps in a cemetery. Now, why might one do that? Kidei shetashalav ruach tuma, so that he would absorb a spirit of defilement. Now, this spirit of defilement is associated with someone that wants to engage in black magic. So, doing this, sleeping in the cemetery, is considered dangerous. Zimnin de mesaknin lei. These spirits or forces can endanger the individual. So one who does that, one who sleeps in a cemetery for this purpose, is acting recklessly. V'hanotu tzipona v'zorkin l'shus harabim. This is also considered something reprehensible. V'pnei she'isha mu'uberes overes alein u'mapeles. They present a danger to a pregnant woman who may pass over them, walk over these thrown fingernails, and then, as a result, miscarry. Velo amoron elo deshokil begnusteri. The problem is exists only if the nails were cut with a scissors. Velo amoron elo deshokil diode udekare. And likewise, another qualification, and that is if the nails of his fingers, of his hands, and his legs were removed. V'lo amoran ela delo goz midi basrayu. Another qualification is that only it presents a problem only if nothing was cut afterwards. In other words, he cut his hand and fingernails and threw them immediately into the Rishus Rabbim. Avol goz midi basrayu. If, however, after clipping his nails, he cut something else less long ball, then they would not present a problem. The lohi, and here the Gemara rejects all of these qualifications and says lekula milsa chayshinan. Even for any form of clipping nails and throwing them into the Rishus Rabbim, we will have a problem. Even if he did cut something afterwards, or even if he did just the hands and not the legs. Tonu rabbanan. Shlosha dvarim nemru b'tzipornayim. There are three things, three points made with regard to nails. Sarfan chosid, one who burns them, is considered very pious. Kovron tzaddik, one who buries them, is considered righteous. Chosid is considered a higher level than tzaddik, and it's explained that by burying them, there still exists a fear that someone might dig them up and discover them. That's why burning them is considered better. Zorkon Rosho, but one who casts them out into the street, he is considered wicked. V'amekiz dam u'mishamish mitasa. This is number 5. One who bloodlets and then engages immediately in intimacy, havyon lo bonim viskin. The result of that will be children that are weak. Hikizu shnehem v'shimshu. If both the man and woman, if the couple engaged in bloodletting and then had intimacy, havyon lo bonim bali roson. He will have children that are called Bali Rosan, which is a state of weakness, even weaker than the Viskin. Omar Rav, V'lo Amoran El Delo Toyimidi. The problem is only if after the bloodletting he didn't taste anything, didn't eat anything. Avol Toyim Midi, if he tasted a morsel of food, less Lon Ba, then the above mentioned problem wouldn't be a problem. Omar Rav Chisda, Osir lo la'odam shishamish mitosu bayo. This is a point that we've seen in earlier Dapim as well, that and here Rav Chisda presents it as a prohibition of conducting intimacy during the daytime. Shenema v'yohavto l'reacha komoicha. And he cites this posuk, which is often translated as "Thou shalt love thy friend as thyself." My mashma, what's the connection between v'yohavto l'reacha komoicha and this? And the issue of tashmish by day. Omar Abaye. Abaye explains the connection. Shemo yireh bo dovor megune v'tizgane olov. If one conducts intimacy during the daytime where there is light, so the man might notice something megune, something repelling about his wife, and he will be repelled, and of course that's a negative outcome. So all of that could have been circumvented by not engaging in daytime intimacy. Hence, the concept of showing affection and concern for your fellow man as yourself would have been accomplished by not getting into a situation where you find yourself repelled by your wife. Omar Rav Huna, Yisrael Kedoshim Hein, V'ein Mishamshin Mitaseim Bayoim. Rav Huna describes the Jewish people as being a holy people, and hence they do not engage in intimacy by day. Omar Rava, Vimhoya Bayis, Ofel Mutter. Rava says that it's not a function of the clock, daytime hours. It's a function of light. Therefore, if it's a Bayis Ofel, if it's a house that has no light in it, even though it might be daytime hours, Mutter, then the prohibition stated by Rav Chisda would not apply. The Talmud Chacham Ma'afil Biksuso Mishamish. A Talmud Chacham, who is a person who is assumed to be extra modest and concerned in his ways, he has a leniency here in that he doesn't have to even be in a dark house, but he can create darkness using his own ksus, literally his own clothing, his cloak, or possibly a reference to a other material that he can cover himself with, thereby causing darkness, and then engage in intimacy, even though you're dealing with daytime hours. So the Gemara that we've just been dealing with, we've entitled under our Nosei heading, Isser Tashmish Bayom. Under our Mivneh heading, the structural note, we feature a house shape, and a few of these appear in the Gemara. These are kushyos al hana. We'll be raising questions. We'll be challenging this din of Rav Chisda. Tanan, oi tishamish leor haner. The Mishnah mentioned that a couple is expected to conduct intimacy using checking cloths. We saw in the Mishnah, Beis Shammai said that there would be 2 checking cloths for every action, for every act of intimacy in a given night. But if he doesn't have that many, so they would be able to check. They would be able to use one checking cloth and then check it, they would be able to engage in intimacy, lor haner, and she would notice if there's any blood flow. So what do you see from here? You see intimacy in the light. That's a question on Rav Chisda. In other words, the option presented in the Mishnah of intimacy by the Or Hanir represents a challenge to Rav Chisda. The Gemara answers, Eimo tivdok li Or Hanir. Not that the actual act of intimacy would be in candle light, but rather they would engage in intimacy in darkness. But since they have limited checking cloths, they would then check the cloth after each act of intimacy, the one cloth that they're going to be reusing, they check it using the candlelight. Toshma, well, we have another challenge. We have a source in which it says, Afal pi shomru hamishamish mitoso lior haner harei ze megune. The Mishnah says that even though it's considered undesirable to engage in intimacy lior haner, but it can be done. The point being here is that it doesn't say osir. It just says it's megune. So the fact that it doesn't say osir is a problem for Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda maintains that it is actually forbidden. So the Gemara answers, Emo haboidek mitosei lior haner hare ze megune. The understanding of this source is not mishamish mitaso, but one who does the checking, the or haner, is considered undesirable. And that's because the checking quality using candlelight won't reveal as much had you used daylight for checking. Checking, of course, for blood. Toshma, another Tanaic source, which will present us with a question on Rav Chisda. V'shel beis Munbaz HaMelech, in the household of Munbaz HaMelech, oysin shloish dvorim, umaskirin oyson l'shvach, they practiced three things, and they're considered praiseworthy for them. Number one, and this is what's important for us, hoyu mishamshin mitosein bayoyim. We've dashed underlined that because that's the main problem. They would conduct intimacy during the day, and it was mentioned here that that's considered praiseworthy. Number two, ubaytkin litoseim b'mila farabo, and the ladies would conduct their female checking using this material called mila farabo. And number three, v'noyagin tuma v'taro b'shlogim, they practiced laws of tuma and taro with regard to snow. These points 2 and 3 will be reviewed by the Gemara as we go on. However, in the meantime, the main problem is presented in number 1. Kotoni Mia, it's said in number 1, Mishamshin Mitosein Bayom. Well, that's a question for or against Rav Chisda. This indicates they did conduct and were intimacy during the daytime and were praised for it. Emo, rather say, an answer for on behalf of Rav Chisda, Boitkin mitosehem bayom. They checked the checking cloths that the women used for their internal checking. They checked them in daylight, and that's considered praiseworthy, as opposed to using, let us say, candlelight for checking. Hochi nami mistabra. It's also likely that the explanation here is that they were Boitkin mitosehem bayom. They did the checking of the material of the cloth that was used for the internal female checking by daylight to see whether or not there was any blood on it. And why is that logical? Why is it logical that that's the pshat? That's the explanation. The isakadai toch mishamshin. If we would keep the text as it is, meaning that they conduct intimacy during the daytime. So maskirin oison l'shvach, is there something praiseworthy about that? Even if you say that it's not forbidden, but how would you explain the point that was included in the source where it said it's maskirin oison l'shvach, where it's praiseworthy? What's praiseworthy about that? The Gemara says there is something praiseworthy in Hachinami. They, in this base Munbaz, had relations during the day, and there's something praiseworthy. The agav v'ika oinis shina meganya ba'ape. If we would have insisted for them to conduct intimacy specifically during the nighttime, very often, out of great fatigue, a man might not conduct the intimacy with a feeling of desire, but only out of a feeling of obligation and burden. And Rashi explains Oinis Shina, about halfway down the page, he says, Mitoch Shunenas Bishina, since he's struggling, fighting sleep and fatigue, Eno Misavelo Kokachi isn't full of desire for her. Umeshamesh Liku Mitzvah Oino Bealma, and his motivation for intimacy under such circumstances was only to fulfill conjugal relations, which is expected of a man with regard to his wife, Oleratsosa, or to appease her because she might want it. However, he is fatigued, Velibo Kutzpa, and as a result he feels a sense of disgust. Vahu, Midne Te Shamido, Samrumus bin Adorim, in Masech Adorim Davchov, there are a list of circumstances under which a person should not conduct intimacy, because it could have negative results on the children born from such a union. So we can actually maintain the pshat of mishamshin v'sembayom in the case of Beis Mundos, which was an act praiseworthy, indicating that they would wait till they were rested before conducting intimacy, so as to avoid this sense of disgust. We continue now explaining the list of things just mentioned in the source. Number two, Boykin Mitisim B'Mila Parabah. The women would conduct their internal checking using this material. Rashi has two pshatim on what it is. One pshat is a French word that sounds like an English word, cotton. The second pshat is some type of very clean and soft wool material. The Gemara says, Messiah Lev to Shmuel, this source supports Shmuel's teaching. Dema Shmuel, Ein Boykin Esamita Ela Befakulin Obetzemer Noki Varach. Shmuel says that one should not, a lady should not conduct their internal checking unless they use Pakulin. Rashi on Pakulin says, cotton, which is like the first pshat that he gave before for Mila Parabah. So, and that's what Shmuel says, that they should use either pakulin or a clean, soft wool. Omar Rav, Hainu Dechi Havoi Hosam. Rav says that with this explanation, now I understand that when I was in Eretz Yisrael, Hosam in this case means there in Eretz Yisrael, Be'arve Shabbosos, on Fridays before Shabbos, in other words, Friday night is known as a time that Talmidei Chachomim were expected to engage in intimacy once a week on Friday night. So on Friday afternoon in Eretz Yisrael, Havu Amri, they used to announce Man Boy Pakuli, who needs Man Boy Pakuli Benahamo. Benahamo literally means bread, but it's a euphemism. So they would announce who wants Pakuli, and then we saw Pakuli is it's a type of material, possibly cotton. And I velo yodana my kwamri. When I was there, I didn't know what they were trying to sell, what they were trying to distribute when they were announcing who wants pakuli. But now I understand that the pakuli, this material that they were offering, either for sale or for distribution, was for the checking in anticipation of intimacy. Omar Rava, Hani Shachaki de Kisna, Mali Libedika. Shachaki is something that's worn out. Kisna is linen. It's like worn out linens are good for checking. Aini, is that really so? Vahotona de Bei Menashe. We have a Tanaic source that says, Ein Boykin Esamita, Lo Be'ed Odom, Velo Be'ed Shachor. One should not use a red piece of cloth or a black piece of cloth. Velo Be'pishton, and not Pishton. Now, we dash them like Pishton because Pishton is Kisna. Pishton is literally is flax, but it's linen. And this source is saying not to use the linen. Ela Be'pakulin, O Be'tzemer Noki Varach. Rather, either use Pakulin or the soft clean wool, but not linen. So how can Rava say that Shachaki de Kisna are good for the checking when the source says otherwise? Lo Kasha, there is no difficulty, there is no problem. Ha be Kisna, ha be Moni de Kisna. One pshat is that it's one. There's a difference between Kisna, which would be flax themselves, and money dikhisna are fabric made from flax, which is linen fabric. The Iboy Asema, another resolution would be Hava Hava Money Dikisna. Both Rava and the source are referring to material made of flax, linen material, Hava Chadati, Hava Shachaki. The less desirable material would be the new linens. Shachaki is worn out. They, according to Rashi, where though Tosfos disagrees, according to Rashi, worn out linen is whiter, whiter in color than new linens. Hence the shachaki, according to this pshat, is more desirable, and that's what Rava was referring to. In fact, Rava's expression was shachaki dikisna. As we go on, we see number three. This is the third one in the list of things that they practice in Beis Munbas. Noagin Tumo Vitaro Bishlogin. Practices of Tuma and Tara were applied to snow. Tanan Hossam. Here we have a Tanaic source that elaborates on this point, and as we go on, it'll become self evident. Sheleg V'eino Lo'oiche V'lo Mashke. Snow is not categorized as food nor as drink. Chishev Olov Le'achila. If a person had in mind to eat snow, that it should serve as a food item. Eino mitame tumas ochlin. Even though he planned to eat it as food, nevertheless it won't become tome according to the rules of tumas ochlin, of food defilement. Lemashke, if however he intended the snow to serve as a mashke, as a drink, Metame tumas mashkin, it will mekabel tumas mashkin. It's the reason for this distinction is pointed out by Rashi that snow is closer to being considered a drink than a food. Nitmo mitzosoi lo nitmo kuloi. If part of the snow became tame, the tuma is not conducted to the entire clump of snow, and it's explained because snow, as many of you are aware, are made of called snow crystals, or we can call them snow grains. The Lashon in Rashi is kurt, which is usually means a grain. In other words, each snowflake is considered a separate entity, so that when Tuma touches the snow, so the first snowflake will become Tomei, the one next to it will also become tame, but tuma is limited. It doesn't go beyond a second, third level of tuma when you're dealing with chulin. So we can talk about the first two flakes that are next to each other becoming tame, but to speak about the whole clump of snow becoming tame, that just won't happen because of this chain of tuma or higher descending hierarchy of tuma, which doesn't go down too many stages, whereas in a clump of snow you'll have many snowflakes there, so that if let's say a dead sheretz touched a piece of snow, so the first snowflake will become a rishon, the snowflake touching that one will become a sheni, and the third snowflake touching that won't be affected in the case of chulin. And that's it. So we've accounted for the tuma of two snowflakes, but in a clump of snow, and there are many, many more, so they won't become tame. That's an explanation of nitmo miksaso lo nitmo kulo. Now it goes on also to say in this source nitar miksasoi Nita Kulo. Now that we'll have to explain in the course of the Gemara. Ha Gufa Kashya. We have an inherent contradiction in this source. Amris, you said Nitmo Mitsoso Lo Nitmo Kuloi. If part of the clump of snow becomes Tame, the rest of it does not. Vahadar Tani, and then you teach Nitar Mitsoso. If part becomes Tohar, then the Tara is effective for the whole thing. Nitar Kuloi. But one second, what do you mean nitar miksoso? By saying nitar miksoso lemeimra, you're implying the nitma kulo, that the whole clump of snow became tomei, and now in being nitahirit, if I can account for tara for part of it, then the whole thing becomes tor. But notice, by saying nitar miksoso, you're implying that it was nitma kulo. But you said that can't be. Before we go further, before we get to the answer, let's just explain this point of nithar miktsaso. If a clump of snow, as we said, became tomei, we haven't explained how that can happen yet. That we're waiting for in the Gemara. But just assuming for a moment that a clump of snow can become completely tomei, how do you have nithar miktsaso? Well, what you would do is you would take the clump of snow, put it in a vessel where the top of the snow in the vessel reaches just above the rim of the vessel. You would then take that vessel to a mikveh, submerge the vessel with the snow in it till the rim of the vessel, where you have the snow just above the rim, the snow would come into contact with the surface water of the mikveh. In halachic terminology, that's called zriya. It's not that I'm being metahir the snow, because food and drink isn't subject to tahara nemikvah. However, the zriya is a connection between the surface of the snow that's in this vessel and the surface of the mikvah. And in that context, the snow becomes botel to the mikvah. It becomes connected and overwhelmed, overruled, if you will, or canceled out by the mikveh. In Hebrew we say it's botel to the mikveh, and hence it becomes tohor, becomes like part of the mikveh, if you will. So that's, and now how much of the snow came into contact with the mikveh? Only the top of the snow, only that part of that was above the vessel that was holding the snow. So that's nithar miksoso, partial tara, just the upper edge of this clump of snow, but the whole clump becomes tohor that way. However, we're in a question mode right now, and the question is, how can you speak about nithar miktsoso, which indicates the whole thing had become tomei, when a moment before you said the whole clump of snow cannot become tomei? Omar Abaye, kegoin shaviro al avir tanur. The case of the snow becoming, in fact, completely tomei is where he took the clump of snow and put it in the airspace of a tanur. A tanur is an earthenware oven, and the halacha is, based on Torah law, if a dead sheretz was dangled in the airspace of a tanur, that tanur becomes tomei. And not only does it become tomei, but anything now that finds itself in the airspace of the tanur, anything, we mean food and drink, as opposed to vessels and people, but food and drink that's put into the airspace of that tanur will become tomei, completely tomei. The Torah he'ido al kli cheres. The Torah tells us, it testifies or tells us about earthenware vessels, afilu maloi harnol. Even if it's full of harol. Harol is an example of it's often translated as mustard seed, but it's something that's a very, very fine, small, granular substance. So that as opposed to standard tumas mago is contact with tuma, where that which you touch, which comes into contact with the original tuma, becomes a rishon, and then it touching the next item next to it becomes a sheni, and you would expect the tuma to go further. Well, it doesn't, because there isn't anything less than a sheni the tuma in the realm of chulin. That's when you're dealing with a domino type effect or chain reaction of tuma communication. However, when you're dealing with airspace of a tanur, the airspace of the tanur imposes tuma in one shot on all food that's in it, regardless of the fact that it might many pieces of many grains of food or granular food substance. It wouldn't matter. The whole thing becomes tomei in one shot. So too with regard to the snow, that even though it's not subject to the entire clump, wouldn't be subject to tumas mago, but tuma as a result of being in the airspace of a tanur that's tomei, that it is subject to, and hence that would be the case that the whole clump of snow in fact became tomei. We continue now at the top of Omid Beis with the Mishnah. The topic heading for this piece of Gemara is Mivne Pnim Gufo Isha. We're going to deal with anatomy, the structure of the woman, specifically in the area of the reproduction organs. And later in the Gemara itself, the Mishnah also makes reference to the Prozdar, and we'll focus on what is the din of blood found in the Prozdar. So first we will read the Mishnah, then we'll look at the beginning of the Gemara, and then make reference to a diagram that may be very helpful in understanding this Gemara. So first the Mishnah, Moshol Moshlu Chachamim Be'isha. The Chachamim were describing the internal workings of the woman, possibly trying to speak in using euphemisms. So the moshel is as follows: Hacheder, v'haprozdor, v'aliya. Three, we'll call them three organs. Dam hacheder tomei, blood coming from the cheder. The cheder might be the uterus, but for our terms, for purposes, we'll stick with the Hebrew terminology. The cheder is also called the mokor. So dam coming from the cheder or from the mokor is tomei. That, in other words, that would make a woman tomei. If we knew that the blood in question came from the cheder, we would know that she is tomei. It would be a nida. Dam ho aliyah tor. If blood comes from the aliyah, that's another organ. And later we'll be more specific when we refer to our diagram, but dam coming from that organ, the aliyah, is tohor. It's not expected to bleed, and if it bleeds, it's probably some type of injury. So we're not dealing with the blood associated with nida. Nimtza beprozdar. If blood is found in this section of the woman's anatomy called the prozdar, sveiko tomei. If we have a doubt, and so we will rule it is tomei. Lefi shechizkosoi min hamokor. The Rashi. Shechizkosoi. We will assume that dam that's found, blood found in the prozdor, is from the mokor, from the cheder. We won't on our own say that it came from the aliyah. The damim, the aliyah tahorin, blood that comes from the aliyah's tor, the mi prozdor lo osidam, hela de me cheder. In the prozdor, the only dam you would expect to find there is blood from the cheder. At times, blood coming from the aliyah could find itself in the prozdar. Up till now, things are somewhat vague, but we continue with the Gemara. We have a Gemara that has a phenomenal structure to it, and it will become much clearer once we go through the entire Gemara, but on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, we have written, you'll see a double underlined feature, Shitos Amoroyim Beramat Hatumo, either Sofek or Vadai, Legabi Mitzias Dam BeMikumim Shonim, the Prozdor. We'll see different Amoraic opinions. If you scan ahead on this Gemara, you see Rami Bar Shmuel, together with Yitzchok Breder of Yosef. You'll see later Rav Huna, who appears in under the Omar Lay, is Rav Huna's response to whatever, but we'll see his opinion. And then later we'll see Abaye. All of these names, you can see, have a double underline to them. And all of these will be addressing the issue of blood found in the Prozdor, but at different sites or different locations in the Prozdor. Let us now continue with the Gemara. Rami Bar Shmuel, Rav Yitzchok Brei de Rav Yehuda, Tanu Nida, Bei Rav Huna. They learned, Tanu Nida, they learned Nida in the yeshiva of Rav Huna. Ashkachinu Rabo Bar Rav Huna, the Yasvi Vikarmri. Rabo met up with Rami and Rav Yitzchok, and he found them saying, Hacheder mibifnim, vaprozdor mibachutz, v'aliyah b'niya al shtehen, v'lul pasuach bein aliyah leprozdor. In order to work with this Gemara, we've supplied a crude illustration. This is far from anything you'd find in Gray's Anatomy, but for our purposes, the illustration will help in understanding the Gemara. The illustration is provided for you at the bottom of the page. We're looking, we'll say, at a cutaway version of the woman. On the, you can see we have on the left-hand side of this diagram, you see the word kadima, which is poneha, meaning that would be her front, the front of the woman, facing forward. And on the right-hand side of the diagram, you notice the word achora. That's her posterior, her back side. So that these organs are now used, featured in this diagram, the aliyah. You can see the aliyah is positioned above the cheder and the prozdar. In our Gemara, it had mentioned that the aliyah benuya al shnehem, aliyah literally is an attic or a second story is built on them. That's the translation, but it means that the organ called aliyah, which we've written on our diagram tohar, means any blood that comes from there would be tohar. That would not make her into anida. So in the Gemara we had learned that the cheder was bifnim. So you can see the cheder in the diagram, which is the also called the mokar, is bifnim, is positioned inwards, hence closer to her back. And the prozdor mibachutz, as you can see, that's more forward positioned. And the Gemara had mentioned that the aliyah is built is an organ above the two of them. The Gemara also mentions, and if we go back to the Gemara text, the lul pasuach bein aliyah leprozdar. There's a passageway that's called a lul that runs between the aliyah and the prozdar. That's the structure. Now we're going to get to dam. So the Gemara says, nimtza, if blood is found, min halul ulifnim, from the lul inwards. We have this on our diagram, an example of blood found at an inner position of the prozdor. So that's called min halul, that's from the lul inwards. So they, that's Rami and Rav Yitzchok, say regarding this case, dam found at that point, sfeikoi tomei. It would be tomei mishum sofek. Beis, min halul v'lachutz. We have this on our diagram also. Blood found from the lul outwards. Sfeiko tohor. So in their perception of things, you'll be in a doubt. When we speak about tuma, that's mishum safek, that would mean that if this woman, after discovering dam, let us say, in that inner position, from the lul inwards in her prozdor, we would say that truma that she touches is set aside to rot, but we wouldn't actively burn it, because active burning of truma is something that you do only in the case when you know something is definitely tameh. Continuing in the Gemara, also the Omar Le Lavua. If you, we recall in this little incident, Rabbah had met up with Romy and Rabbi Yitzchak, and he heard them saying these things. So also, Rabbah comes along and asks his father, and we're talking about his father is Rav Huna. So Rabbah comes along and asks his father, Ramalei Lavua, Sveiko, Tomei, Amris, Lonmar, did you say to us that the Tumah is Mishum Safek and not Vadai, not definite Tumah? Vo'anan Shechazkosoi Min HaMokor Tnan. Notice we have an arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and if you align this with the arrow above, the Mishnah taught that blood found in the Prozdar is Tomei. There's doubt concerning its Tumah, but it's a doubt that we view as certain. In other words, we will treat it as certainly having come from the Mokar. And that's what the Mishnah said, Fisha Chizkoso Imin HaMokar. When you say Chizkoso, you're telling me that it's an assumption that is of a positive assumption, you know, or a definite assumption that it came from the Mokar. So when you speak in terms of Chizkoso Imin HaMokar, you're telling me, you're really telling us definite Tumah. So Rabbah's question to Rav Huna is, how can they, Romy and Rav Yitzchak, who learned in your yeshiva, how can they say, make reference to min halul lifnim and say sveikoi tomei, that it's tomei mishum safek, when the Mishnah would indicate that it's a definite level of tumah? Omar le, Rav Huna says, ano hochi kuamino, I say thusly. And now Rav Huna goes on record as to what he holds. Min halu v'lifnim, blood found from the lul inwards in the prozdar, vadai tomei. Min halu v'lachutz, if it's found beyond the lul, facing, going forward, then sveiko tomei. So Rav Huna splits. If it's if the blood is found in a lul v'lifnim, then there's definite tumah. If it's found from the lul outwards, it's considered tome only misafek. Omar Abaye, Maishno min haluv lachutz desfeko tome. Why is it? What's different about min haluv lachutz that you say it's tome only on a level of doubt? And what's the doubt? The Dilma shichasa umecheder asa. Maybe she did a motion, a shichasa motion, which is a movement where the person lunges forward, we'll say. If she were to lunge forward, so the blood that would be located closer to her back, namely in the cheder, could come out and pushed forward to the point of min haluv lachutz. Therefore, we entertain that possibility that maybe she was shichasa. As we explained, that was an action of lunging forward. So, if that's why you say that min haluv lachutz there's safek tumah, from the lul inwards, say as well, is dakra umealia osa, that she did another kind of body motion, is dakra, Rashi says, nizkifa litzad achoreha, she not lunged forward, but lunged backwards, and by doing that, blood may have come from the aliyah, and pushed back to the prozdor min halul v'lifnim. So the question here is, why does Rav Huna in Rav Huna Beis, why does he say, Rav Huna Aleph, that is, why does he say min halul v'lifnim vadai tomei when it might be really blood from the aliyah? And if you ask, how did it get from the aliyah to be so far back, the answer is maybe she did this action throwing herself backwards. And that's what the term is dakra means. Elo Omar Abaye. Abaye now presents his take on this issue of dam found in the prosdor, min alufutz and min alufnim. Abaye says, "In boser chashosha aslis, if you rule based on doubt, on chashash, on suspicion of things that might have happened, well then idi vidi safeku, both min alufnim and min alufutz, we will have to treat as safek." And as we said before, when you say safek tumah, that would mean the truma that she may have touched will be left to rot and not be burnt. So Abaye says, if that which governs your ruling is going based on chashash, so you'll have to say that both cases would be safek alone. The e boser chazaka aslis, and if you go according to the way things usually happen, based on their given status, their given way, then min halufnim vaday tamei, min haluv lechutz vaday tohor. Then you wouldn't make a split either, like Rav Huna did, but rather, if it's found from the lul inwards, there's a chazaka that it came from the cheder. If it's min haluv lechutz, it's so far forward, there's a chazaka that it did not come from the cheder, and therefore she would be vaday tahora. At this point in the Gemara, then, we've seen three approaches to the issue of dam found in the prosdor, min alufim and min aluv alachutz. At this point in the Gemara, two sources will appear. We've highlighted them with triangles. At first glance, when we read these two sources, they will appear to be contradicting or arguing with one another. We have a note in our margin. You'll notice there's a double star. He'ora. Mivne ha-gemora, the structure of this gemora, is livchoin hashitois ha-mesimonos kach, to test out or to try to align the shitos marked with the double underline, or hamakoros hamasumonos, with the triangle. In other words, we're going to try to resolve or align the Amoraic opinions that we've seen till now with two Tanaic sources and see if the Amoraim and their respective opinions can coexist with one or both of these Tanaic sources. So as we go along in the Gemara, it's very important to not only pay attention to the source that we're dealing with, but also connecting it up with the opinions that have been highlighted with the double underline. Toni Rebbe Chia. Dam hanimtzar beprozdor. Rebbe Chia teaches in a source, blood found in the prozdor, chayovin olov albias mikdosh, v'sarfin olov as a truma. Very simple terms. It is a source of definite tuma. As a result of that, if a woman, let's say, that had blood found in her prosdar, went into the Beis HaMikdash, she would be in violation of Bias Mikdash, of entering the Mikdash in a state of tuma. And people who do that, if they do so unwittingly, they will be obligated to bring a sacrifice. And Sorfinal is a truma, as we've made allusion to this a number of times in today's shiur, if she touches this woman who had dam found in her prosdor, and she touches truma, we will burn the truma. That's the way we deal with truma that is definitely tomei. Rav Katina Omar. Rav Katina has a source. Now, we have a note that, based on what we see in Rashi on Daf Yud Ches Omen Aleph and Dibur Masel Elo, this is a Tanaic source. So Rav Katina's source reads, Ein chayoven olav albias mikdash, the ein sarfen olav as a truma. Regarding the same case of dam hanimsa beprozdar, he says we will not obligate the woman or condemn the woman who enters the Beis HaMikdash having found blood in her prosdar, nor will a woman like that who touches truma will not result in the truma's burning. Indicating, for one thing for sure, that according to Rav Katina, this is not a case of definite tuma. Now, we go through the above opinions, the Amoraic opinions, and see how they conform to these sources. Lahach lishna the Amar Abaye, the number one, there were two diamonds that you see under Abaye's name. There was number one and number two. So lahach lishna, the number one lashon, the Amar Abaye, I baser chashosha asliz. What did Abaye say? That if you base your opinion on chashash, then both cases of the prosdor, we will treat as safek tuma. So according to the first lashon presented by Abaye, the first diamond by Abaye, who spoke about going according to ruling based on chashash, based on possibilities, Messiah lay the Rav Katina, upliga the Rebbe Chia. This approach, Abaye 1, conforms to that which you see in Rav Katina's source, because Abaye in the number 1 diamond said, if you go according to Chashash, so all cases are suffic. Well, Rav Katina presented the way we deal with dam found in the prosdar, we deal with it as a suffic tumah. And that would also be at odds with Rebbe Chia. In other words, Abaye number one, the first diamond Abaye comment, does not align or conform to Rebbe Chia's teaching. Rebbe Chia mentioned that dam that's found in the prosdor is treated as definite tumah. Abaye in diamond number one spoke about dam found in the prosdor as being suffic. The Gemara continues, lahach lishno de amris. The second lashon of Abaye, that's diamond number two, that said I boser chazoka azlis, and in that case Abaye then made a distinction. Well, if it's min alu b'fnim, it'll be definite tuma. Min alu v'chutz, it'll be definite tara. So according to Abaye number two, Messiah le l'rav chia u pliga. The Gemara continues at the top of Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph, who pligo the Rav Katina. Now, how does Abaye 2 find support, or how would that support Rebbe Chia's teaching? Well, in Rebbe Chia's teaching, we saw definite tumah. Abaye number 2, we also saw definite tumah, assuming that you're dealing with dam found in the prosdor min halul v'lifnim. And that you can see if you look back at diamond number 2 of Abaye, that min halul v'lifnim, there was varay tuma. Reb Chia speaks about definite tuma, but we'll have to say that Reb Chia's source and definite tuma is talking about dam found in the prosdor min halul v'lifnim. So Abaye number 2 can coexist with Rabbi Chia, and provided we explain that Rabbi Chia's source is talking about dam found in the prosdor min halul v'lifnim. Abaye 2 cannot agree with Rav Katina, because according to Abaye number 2, you saw definite tuma or definite tara. Rav Katina spoke about a suffek tuma situation. So we have to say that Abaye number 2 finds itself at odds with Rav Katina's teaching. We go now to the next opinion. Working our way backwards, we go to Rav Huna. Now, the Rav Huna, lo pligi. According to Rav Huna, Rebbe Chia is not at odds with him, nor is Rav Katina. And not only that, but Rav Huna, according to Rav Huna's approach, Rebbe Chia and Rav Katina themselves are not at odds with each other.
How are we to explain all of that? Well, if we look back at Rav Huna, who was double underlined where the Amarle appeared, Rav Huna spoke about min alul ufnim as being definite tumah. Well, that's what Rabbi Chiya's source was talking about. That dam found in the prozdar min alul ufnim, then you would burn the truma she touches and she'd be chaya for bias mikdash. If, however, you found min alul v'lachutz, what did Rav Huna say? Min alul v'lachutz, he treated sofek tome. Well, Rav Kitin also spoke about sofek tuma. And we'd have to say that that's a case if you found it min alul v'lachutz. So that Rav Chi is talking about one case, and Rav Kitin is talking about another case. They're not arguing with each other. And both of them, Rav Chiya and Rav Kitin, don't pose any difficulty for Rav Huna, as we just explained. Let's read this now in the Gemara. The Rav Huna lo pligi kan min alul ufnim. Rav Chiya's source, which spoke about definite tuma, that's talking about blood found in the prozdar from the point kol ufnim. Rav Katina that spoke about safek min alul v'lachutz. Elola Rami bar Shmuel ulRav Yitzchak brei the Rav Yehuda the Amri. According to them, these were the first opinions that you can see with the double underlines on Yud Zayin with Beis. The Amri, they said min halul v'lachutz sfeiko tohor. They speak about definite. They speak about the doubt that we have is treated as tohor min halul. Ulifnim sfeiko tame. They spoke about if it's found on the inner side of the prozdor, inner more than the lul, then it's treated as sofek tuma. Hani b'may mesukma. The sources of Rav Chiya and Rav Katina, what are they talking about? Well, you'll have to say min halul ulifnim. You'll have to say that they are talking about the case of lul lefim, because min alul v'lachutz there isn't even a suffek, as we saw. They said sfeiko is tahar, meaning the doubt that you may have is treated as definite taharas. Tahara, and they, Rabbi Chiya and Rav Kinin, didn't speak about any tahara. That being said, namely, that we're going to have to say that Rami Bar Shmuel and Rav Yitzchak Breider of Yehuda are talking about min halul ulifnim, and they said that it's sofek tomei. Leima pliga de Rabbi Chiya. Should we then say that they are at odds with Rabbi Chiya, because Rabbi Chiya didn't have any sofek? He spoke about vadai tuma. Whereas, according to Rami and Rabbi Yitzchak, there was no vadai tuma. The Gemara answers, lo kashya. Granted, we have to speak about min halul ulifnim. But still, we don't have to say that they at our odds with Rabbi Chiya. Kan kishenimsa bakaka prozdar. Rabbi Chiya, who spoke about vadai tuma, that is because the dam, the blood, was found on the floor, on the base, on the low part of the prozdar, which Rashi explains that's its normal way of coming forth from the cheder. When blood oozes forth or is exuded from the cheder, it goes and flows along the floor of the prozdar, and since that's its normal way, blood found over there would be definite tuma. Kan shenimsa begag prozdar. The situation Rami Bar Shmuel and Rabbi Yitzchak were talking about was dam found on the top part, on the roof of the prozdar. That is unusual, and therefore we can say in such a case it would only be suffek tuma and not vadai tuma. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.